Welcome to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey newsrooms across the country.
Greg Bovino is out. He'll be replaced by Border Czar Tom Holman. The exact timetable for Bovino's departure from the Twin Cities isn't known, but a group of protesters last night went to what is believed to be his hotel, the Spring Hill Suites by Marriott in Maple Grove. State Patrol officers were called in.
My name is Lieutenant Eric Micek with the Minnesota State Patrol. Due to your unlawful conduct and threat to public safety, I hereby declare this an unlawful assembly.
Minnesota House Democratic Caucus Leader Zach Stevenson on the change of leadership.
He's been repeatedly saying things to the people of Minnesota that are easily contradicted by our own eyes. And we don't appreciate being lied to. I'm glad he's leaving. It's a good start. It's not nearly enough.
Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey says as a result of a conversation he had with President Trump, a number of federal agents will also be leaving the states, along with Bovino. Al Schock, Newstalk A3O, WCCO.
I'm Christy Strausser, Odyssey's managing editor of news. The United States is kicking off 2026 with an unlikely battle between states and the federal government. It came to a boiling point after federal agents shot and killed two U.S. citizens in separate incidents during protests in Minneapolis, and the feds blinked. Here's WCCO with more on the departure of top Border Patrol official Gregory Bovino and some of his agents, as President Donald Trump replaced him with Border Czar Tom Homan.
We've learned this morning that Governor Tim Walz has already had an initial meeting with Tom Homan. The governor's office said in a written statement that Walz stressed the need for a change in course that includes, quote, impartial investigations into the Minneapolis shooting involving federal agents, a swift, significant reduction in the number of federal forces in the state, and an end to the campaign of retribution against Minnesota.
So the people in charge of the operation changed, and then something even more extraordinary happened. A federal judge got involved in the escalating tensions between a state and its federal government.
We are having a clash between federal authority and state authority. And a local judge and a national agency are at the center of this controversy. Because what has happened here in Minnesota that our chief federal judge, Patrick Schlitz, has said that the Trump administration has failed to comply with orders for hearings for detained immigrants, meaning like anybody in custody, if you get swooped up or I get swooped up, we don't have a speedy hearing. All right. And that is a problem. So today, the head of Immigration Enforcement and Customs has been ordered to appear in person before this federal judge here in Minnesota to explain why this is a pivotal moment in how we assess the law and if the tenets of democracy are holding up is Mark Osler. Mark is a former federal prosecutor and the Robert and Marion Short Distinguished Chair in Law at the University of St. Thomas. Mark, welcome back to the show.
It's good to be back. Thank you.
So talk to us about what is happening. Is the federal government slow walking legalities?
Yes. You know, and that is what is coming out in this order that we've seen from Judge Schiltz, is that he refers to the fact, and this is remarkable, he says this is one of dozens of court orders with which respondents have failed to comply in recent weeks. That's a lot of frustration. So what he's saying is that courts have ordered that people be released or that they get a bail hearing, basically, and DHS has just ignored that. One of the things that's in play here is that the people he's talking to, and he recognizes this in a footnote, are from the Department of Justice. It's from the people from the U.S. Attorney's Office. That is a different, you know, whole different bureaucracy than DHS, which is the people who are holding them. So basically what's happening is, the assistant U.S. attorneys are going into court. They're receiving an order that something happened. They're passing it along to DHS, and DHS isn't doing it. They're ignoring it. And that leads us to, that's why Judge Schiltz is saying, okay, I've had it. I know the problem isn't this attorney who's standing in front of me. And that's what he says in the footnote. The problem is ICE and DHS. And so I'm going to order the head of ICE to appear in person on Friday. And that is an extraordinary measure.
Extraordinary measure. How rare is it?
Extremely rare. That usually, we're going to allow the government to be represented by the Department of Justice attorneys are here in Minnesota, as opposed to calling for someone who's being represented by them. But here, what Judge Schultz has seen is that disjuncture between the people he's talking to and the people who are in charge of DHS, which is now acting like a renegade part of the government that's ignoring court orders.
That's my question. How is that possible that they could ignore court orders? And I'm just thinking about this for regular Minnesotans. Like, if I got swooped up and I was down at the Whipple building, can they hold me there indefinitely and not give me a speedy hearing?
The law says no, they can't do that. But what Judge Schultz is recognizing is, yes, they are doing that. And the other thing that he mentions there is that they're even, they're sending people to Texas. And then from there, they're filing habeas petitions, which is an ancient writ which says, I'm challenging you holding me. And another thing in this very short order that contains a lot of information from Judge Schultz is that this, this surge of ICE agents into Minneapolis was not accompanied with any way to deal with all the habeas petitions that are being filed as people are locked up. Held without any immediate recourse.
And we've seen many of those be successful, that the many mm-hmm. judges are ruling that, this is not right, and people are being released again. What remedy?
The vast majority of the habeas petitions have been successful, and that's really unusual, too. And so that tells us something is going wrong in this system.
So in this particular instance, Mark, we're talking to Mark Osler, a law professor at the University of St. Thomas. What remedies can a judge realistically enforce if the U.S. government, let's say that the head of ICE doesn't appear on Friday?
Right.
Then I think he's going to have to, hold him in contempt of court. And, that's going to be a serious escalation. But we're living in unusual times legally and on the streets.
That's what I was wondering, if Todd Lyons, who is the acting director of ICE, if he's even going to show up, because one would assume he would get support maybe on a federal level for not showing up.
Well, we've seen Kristi Noem, who's the head of that agency, kind of at times seem to encourage that sort of behavior. Now, I will say that Judge Schultz has a trap door here that this order does say, if before the hearing, which is set for Friday, the parties file a stipulation indicating that the petitioner, that is the individual who's being held in this case, has been released from custody, the court will cancel the hearing and not require Lyons to appear. So basically, it's saying, okay, if you let the guy out before Friday, you don't have to mm-hmm. appear. But that doesn't really solve the problem systemically. It's going to come up in another case and another case and another case.
What power do lawyers have, from your understanding of how this is all playing out, Mark, what power do immigration attorneys have to get a person released while they're still here in Minnesota? Because we've heard many, many times, people are being sent to Texas and other places, mm-hmm. as you mentioned.
Yeah, it's a challenge, because lawyers are people too, and sometimes if you're out of town, if you're busy with something else, by the time you're able to go to show up for that person, they've been sent to Texas, and then you're going to be filing a habeas petition in the Western District of Texas, someplace like El Paso. And one of the things that I'm getting tons of messages from lawyers, because I practice in the Western District of Texas, is people wanting to connect with lawyers there so that they can file the habeas petitions for their clients.
What would be the explanation that Todd Lyons might explain to the judge about why people have been held longer and not getting their hearings? What would be his defense?
I can only guess that if he were to appear, that would be a mm-hmm. pretty politicized thing. And so we could hear, he says, well, we're just overwhelmed with numbers. But I wouldn't be surprised to hear him come in and say what people from this administration have said across the board, which is, this is Tim Walz's fault, which is frankly ridiculous.
I While we have you on, I want to ask you about one other thing here, because you're a former federal prosecutor, and over the last couple of weeks here, we've seen mass resignations, or at least resignations by some top prosecutors here in the U.S. Attorney's Office in Minneapolis, including Joe Thompson, who's been really at the forefront of this fraud fight. What do you think about what's going on, and what's like what we're seeing and how unprecedented this is? Or is it unprecedented?
It is, and it is remarkable and sad. The loss of talent is really significant. Literally, all the lawyers who were working on the Feeding Our Future case are gone, and you can't just pop someone in. I mean, we all remember being in high school, and you've got some tough class like chemistry or physics, and then one day a sub comes in. Everything just stops because the person doesn't know the subject, doesn't know the people, doesn't know where you are. And you know, that's kind of what we're going to see is, they're going to bring people in from other areas, but they don't know the case. And it's an incredibly complicated case. Systemically, the talent that they're losing in DOJ across the board, but especially here, is a shock to the system that's going to take a long time to recover from. And frankly, U.S. Attorney Rosen has brought a politicized lens to this that has driven people away, that I think he's going to go down as one of the worst U.S. attorneys we've seen judge on his performance so far.
Was it the... because I'm curious to know about these resignations, and we've asked U.S. Attorney Rosen to come on multiple times to talk about it, as well as Joe Thompson. Was it the fact that they were being told to investigate Renee Good's wife? Was that, do you think, the major sticking point? Because they were still doing good work with Feeding Our Future. I don't think anybody wanted to stop those investigations.
No, and I can't speak to their reasons. Only they really can. Okay. But the timing lines up with that, and I can tell you that some of those people that resigned, I worked with closely, because I was the criminal director, the director of the criminal division at Hennepin County. So my counterpart was Melinda Williams, for example, at the U.S. Attorney's Office, and these were superb prosecutors, people who really had a balanced view, did good investigations, were good at bringing people up, dealt with some hard situations when, suddenly everyone was doing crime and violence cases, which I think was a good move, but it was a lot to ask of people. And they stepped up and did that, and that's who we're losing. And I can tell you, when we see what the effect of, bad people in positions like that is, we too often don't recognize the effect of good people in those positions. And unfortunately, that's what we're losing.
Mark, good to have you back on the show, and we'll reach out again. Thank you for the time.
Sure thing.
Mark Osler, a professor and a Robert Marion Short Distinguished Chair of Law at St. Thomas University.
While they're stepping back in Minneapolis after two deadly situations and massive protests, ICE is making plans to be prominent somewhere else, the Super Bowl. Here's KCBS.
ICE agents at Super Bowl 60. For more on this, we're joined live on the KCBS Ring Central Newsline by our KCBS insider, Phil Matier. Phil, good morning. I guess I'm trying to picture in my mind exactly how this would look, how it might work.
Well, it's worked in the past. They've been at Super Bowl 59, 58, 57, 56. The fact of the matter is Super Bowl is one of the highest security alerts that we have in the country. And as a result, as the people come pouring in, so do law enforcement, not only from around the counties and around the Bay Area, but around the state and around the nation. If you can play a trivia game walking around identifying all the different alphabet agencies that will be on hand. It's everyone from Homeland Security, the FBI, the alcohol, firearms, and tobacco. Everybody's there in some form or another, including ICE and the Border Patrol. It's a major difference now is that there is an emphasis on what is ICE going to be doing there. That's what's different from past Super Bowls, and it's going to be very interesting to see.
Is it an intimidation factor, perhaps?
No, and in the past it hasn't been. It's just been getting bodies out there and making sure it's trying to make things as secure as possible. And you know, security is a growth industry. You know, you can never have too much of it. So people are always figuring out a way to add somebody onto it, whether it's bomb sniffing dogs, you name it, or spotters up on rooftops. You put a name on it, they're going to be there. They're going to be in San Francisco for the Super Bowl experience since we're hosting it, and they're going to be in Santa Clara. Now, it got politicized with the Bad Bunny, Green Day, Trump doesn't like who's playing in the halftime, we're going to really amp it up. It got politicized and it got advertised that they're going to be there and a strong presence, but it remains to be seen in the wake of Minneapolis whether that is going to be, in fact, the case. Now, there's a balance that goes on here. Security is, the call of the police chief, whether it's San Francisco or Santa Clara, and that brings all the agencies together and they coordinate. But that said, ICE, like any federal agency, also can do what it wants as well. If they decide to instigate an action, that's independent. So we're going to be watching and seeing. It depends on what the temperature and what the president and everybody's thinking at that given moment. But as it said, ICE's presence at these events is not new. What they do going forward, that's what people are going to be looking at.
So they'll roam the Super Bowl, but Buffalo Mayor Sean Ryan, in his very first executive order, is trying to make sure they don't feel welcome in upstate New York. Here's more.
Scott McFarlane joining us with a look at what's happening in Minnesota and the response in Washington. Scott, thanks for being with us this morning. The investigation that's underway, there's still this question over who should take the reins, and if there's any changing in that. We've heard the president kind of softening his tone over the last couple of days. Does that deal with the investigation that will take place into this shooting?
Not yet, it hasn't. It's still the Department of Homeland Security investigating itself, investigating its own federal agent and the shooting that killed the man Saturday morning. It killed the woman earlier in January. I mean, these are two different probes being spearheaded by the Department of Homeland Security, and that's raising any number of concerns that that's not a best practice to have a police department or a police agency investigate its own fatal shooting. You want to have an outside set of eyes on it, but also that the FBI is not part of this, that the locals are not part of this. This is causing another layer in this controversy, complicating things further for the Trump administration.
And what about the leadership here? Greg Bovino is out of Minnesota. Tom Homan is in, and Kristi Noem, she's facing a lot of internal scrutiny as well.
Yeah, our CBS News reporting was just posted this morning is that this has been a particular problem for the DHS Secretary, Kristi Noem. There are questions being raised about her administration of this sweeping department, about her oversight of what's been happening in Minneapolis, and about her future inside the agencies and inside the administration. I'll also add there are now more than 140 U.S. House Democrats who have signed on to a resolution calling for her impeachment. And having a lot of Democrats against Kristi Noem is not in and of itself newsworthy, but you got to see where some of these Democrats are from. They're from some of the most competitive districts in America, where typically you had to be on the right side of immigration issues or with Trump on immigration to win. They're now defecting. That would include in a competitive district on Long Island and competitive districts in the Midwest.
Rosanna Berardi of Berardi Immigration Law. We're talking about ICE enforcement, what that has been like locally. Rosanna, thanks for joining us this morning. I want to start just with yesterday's announcement by Buffalo's Mayor Sean Ryan and what exactly it means, barring city employees and resources from being used to aid federal civil immigration enforcement. What is happening right now that wouldn't be able to happen, or what does this change in the city of Buffalo?
So it's a complicated issue, but the easiest way to explain it is in the city of Buffalo, if you have overstayed your visa and you're driving down the street, you get pulled over for speeding and the officer finds out that you've overstayed your visa, he or she will not refer you to the immigration service because the overstay of your visa is a civil immigration violation. Okay. So the executive order basically says to the city of Buffalo employees that they are not to forward any individuals who have civil violations with the immigration law to federal law enforcement. Now, same example, if someone's pulled over and there's an outstanding warrant for, you know, robbery, and that person is a non-citizen, the city official is definitely going to refer that individual to the Federal Immigration Service. So it's these civil violations, the ones that don't seem as bad, overstaying your visa, is really what they're focusing on.
He said that this has been the policy, but he was basically putting it in writing. But is he, as an immigration attorney, I'm asking, do you think he's putting a target on the city?
I really don't. This executive order sounds like it's a lot, but it really isn't. It really applies in a very narrow way. If he had said, you know, we're not cooperating with any criminality whatsoever, will not be going to the Federal Immigration Service, that's a huge deal. But they crafted this very carefully to only apply to civil violations. And I also think, you know, it is a way, it's a political way of saying, look, City of Buffalo residents, we're here to protect you. But because the immigration law is very convoluted and hard to explain, many people think it's something that it's not.
Well, all the attention has been focused in other parts of the country, obviously Minneapolis, some other cities as well. But what have we seen in terms of increased ICE activity or just immigration enforcement in Buffalo and Western New York over the last year?
Well, I mean, we're definitely seeing an increase in enforcement, you know, things where people are at the local immigration office applying for an application or benefit and are being picked up by ICE. We're seeing the government really, you know, really, really be aggressive and really trying to look at everything and everyone microscopically, where in previous years, they wouldn't do that. We're just seeing a lot more attention paid. Now, we're not seeing these, you know, bust down the door type of things. Are they coming? I don't know. I hope not. But we are just seeing in general, just a more aggressive agency that, you know, people elected this administration to fix immigration, but I don't think this is what people really had in mind in terms of really, it's the manner in which they're doing it.
These ICE crackdowns obviously are aimed at illegals, but Rosanna, are they targeting legal immigrants as well, people who came here the right way?
They are. It's really unfortunate. People that have a green card, which takes years and years and a lot of money and patience and time and accomplishments to obtain, green card holders are being hassled to show their immigration status, or, you know, U.S. citizens are being caught up in the mix of some of these chaotic riots and moments. And that's the issue. It's, I don't think anybody has a problem really removing individuals that have committed serious offenses. But, you know, these lower level things, or people that have followed the law and have done the right thing, you know, just seem really out of proportion.
People who have claimed asylum, who are living in this area, I think there's generally a feeling that they're showing up to a lot of these court cases, court dates, and they don't feel like it's going to go their way just based on everything they're seeing in the news. What is the status of that? Are these claims going through slower, quicker than usual? And has there been any difference in the amount of people who are able to stay in this country?
Well, I mean, new asylum applicants, that has been completely shut off. So if you wanted to come to the U.S. and claim political asylum, now is not your time to do that. But as for people here, the problem with the political asylum program is that it is just backed up. On a good day, you know, you could wait 3 years for your hearing. So the system is very muddied. It takes a long time. Individuals are afraid to go because they're worried they're going to be just picked up and scooted away, which violates the due process clause of our Constitution. So we're not seeing a ton other than no new asylees or refugees coming to the U.S. because those programs have been suspended, which no one's really talking about that, but that's a huge deal. That's a really, really big deal. And I understand no one's talking about it. There's so many more inflammatory things going on, but to shut the doors on refugees and asylees in general in the United States, that's really not how we've played the immigration law for many, many decades.
Overall, what do you make of the tension right now between federal and state and local governments over immigration enforcement?
Yeah, this one's going to go up to the Supreme Court. We have, you know, we've got the states versus the feds. It's not good. Doesn't matter what your political affiliation is. It is not good when governments can't get on the same page. I think yesterday we saw a little bit of a backing down by the administration in Minnesota. But listen, this isn't the first or last time this is going to happen. The states are suing, saying, you know, the federal government has gone too far. Difficult because a lot of the case law in the Constitution gives the federal government and its agencies a lot of power with respect to immigration and keeping America safe. But I think we're going to see this fast-tracked to the U.S. Supreme Court, and I think we're going to see a major ruling. Now, the Supreme Court has an emergency docket. Normally, it can take a long time to get on the Supreme Court's docket, but there's an emergency way of doing it. And I think we're going to see that because cooler heads have to prevail here, and that's going to be the judiciary, because we've seen the executive branch in action. Congress has done absolutely nothing with respect to this issue or trying to fix immigration. They haven't in 30 years. They probably will never. So I think we have to see the judiciary at the Supreme Court level really make a decision and put maybe both parties in the corner to cool off, time out. This inflammatory situation cannot continue to happen in America.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey. On Deadline is written and produced by me, Christy Strasser, and by Lauren Barry. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.